This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 490.
That's so funny. I was just in Home Depot yesterday and somebody that follows me on Instagram came up to me and he wanted to know like how to start flipping and buy these millionaires. I was like, dude, just go to the bank, get that little bit the bank will give you and buy something.
Yep.
That's your easiest thing to do right off the bat and live in it. You're paying somebody else's mortgage. Might as well pay your own mortgage at least. House hack, whatever you want to be.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everyone? It's Brendan Turner, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. David Green. David, man, what's up, dude? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Just plugging along, trying to stay consistent with our goals. My tax return should finally be getting done, so I'll be looking to buy some more properties pretty soon and still growing the real estate team and the mortgage company and making great content with you.
Yeah, awesome, man. I love it. Well, I am pumped about today's interview, which we're going to get to in just a minute. I've actually got our guest coming into the sea shed to sit with me and chat. But before we get there, I do want to get to today's quick tip. All right, quick tip. The book that I wrote with Brian Murray, the two of them, volume one and volume two of The Multifamily Millionaire is out. So go to biggerpockets.com/store and get the book now. You can only get it on Bigger Pockets right now. So we'll ship it to you and you get a bunch of cool bonus stuff when you buy from Bigger Pockets. In fact, the bonus stuff is just as cool as the book itself. So buy it from Bigger Pockets. You get all that stuff and do it right now. And then do me a favor. Let me know over on Instagram. Shoot me a DM that just says you got the book, or even better, post a picture of it, of your receipt or your whatever. Post it up to your socials so you can let the world know. It just helps me out, and I appreciate all of you, and I love the support. So thank you all. That is today's quick tip.
What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Hold on, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that I turned one of my first homes into an Airbnb? It's true. And it even helped me get the extra income I needed to launch my real estate career. So if you want to try your hand at making even more income with your property, Airbnb is the place to be. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Finding rental property insurance has been a headache for the past few years. You know the feeling. You're scrambling, calling 20 different insurance agencies in a dozen different cities, struggling to protect your portfolio at the right cost. But I'm going to tell you a little secret that'll change everything. Veteran investors don't go through the everyday insurance companies. They just use NREG. NREG, that's N-R-E-I-G, provides insurance solely for real estate investors. They've built the largest insurance program in the country for residential tenant-occupied, vacant, and renovation properties. The best part? You can put all your properties on one insurance schedule and one monthly bill. And you can add, change, or remove properties without having to cancel one policy and purchase another. They insure properties from single-family rentals up to 20-unit multifamily dwellings, vacation rentals, mobile homes, condos, and more. Trade catchy jingles for cash flow with insurance made for investors. Visit nreig.com/bppod to request a proposal. nreig.com/bppod.
All right, that's it, man. I think it's time to get into today's, I guess, interview, chat with our guest Indar. So Indar is a real estate investor from the island on the island of Oahu out here in Hawaii, but he flew the long, crazy trip over to Maui to sit with me in the shed. I think it was a 22-minute flight.
Yeah.
22-minute flight over here. Indar, welcome to the Sea Shed, man. How you doing?
Great. Aloha, everybody out there. So honored and excited to be here with you guys and just to share our story about Hawaii and how we've done it here in Hawaii.
I love it, man. I'm excited to dig in because I know you got a cool thing going right now. Whenever I watch on, like, on your Instagram, like, you're investing in Crazy Oahu, which is nuts expensive, yes, super competitive. And then you're also doing stuff on the mainland, like a long distance, yes, invest. And you can't get much more long distance than like Hawaii to like Ohio, Pennsylvania, something.
Yeah, we're all over. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, so that's crazy. So I want to hear that whole story. But first, why real estate? How did you even get into the idea of, I want to invest in real estate?
Yes. I mean, that's a great question. It's kind of a small question could turn into huge, but it stemmed off into that passion, that love of wanting to learn about doing real estate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you want to take it to the next level in life. I got an engineering degree and it's great money. You know, I can make, I don't know, $150,000 a year, which is great money. And I'm very grateful to be able to do that degree if I wanted to. But, you know, for me, I just wanted more in life. You know, I wanted to be to the next level in life. I wanted the $1 million and the, you know, et cetera, of all of that more in life. Real estate was the next avenue to do it. I surrounded myself with very successful people, people who had influence in life, who had money, and I only listened to them. And those people either did real estate or had real estate as part of their portfolio. Yeah. You know, these are multimillionaires. And I started noticing that that was part of their life. And so that just kind of led me to start wanting to figure out more. And this was, I don't know, 15 years ago plus,
yeah,
that the ideas started rolling in my head.
Well, I hear that from like CPAs all the time who say like they got into real estate because they kept seeing their clients, how all of their wealthy clients, yeah, either own real estate or were full-time real estate,
yeah,
investors.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's this pattern you see with wealthy people and,
yeah,
you're like, hey, I want to do that. So what was your very, very first investment ever?
First deal I ever did was my own personal property. I was young, went to the bank and I said, give me all the money you got. You know, at the time,
and they arrested you and threw you in jail for it. Yeah,
at the time, the bank would only give me like $240,000.
Okay.
And if you know anything about Oahu and where we live, $240,000 gets you probably about the size of this
shed. Yeah, yeah.
So I literally bought like a box. So like me and my wife, girlfriend at the time, bought this tiny little box and we lived in it. We fixed it up and I did a deal, you know, do it yourself. Everything and lived in it 2 years and did that 2 year hack of selling it. And with after 2 years, you pay no taxes.
Yeah, that's cool. Can you explain that real quick? For those people who have never heard that amazing benefit to owning real estate, what's the 2 year thing?
So, as long as you live in a place for 2 years, you don't have to pay any taxes after that. It's up to $250,000. If you're married, it's $500,000.
Yeah.
You don't pay any taxes on that. So, you just got to live or show that you lived in that place for 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's a great tax incentive. You know, now at the level where we're at, I'm always looking at tax incentives and all the tax legal tricks to do, you know, around it from, you know, appreciation, depreciation, and, yeah, all the other fun stuff that we love to talk about.
Yeah, I know. You always tell, there's like, you get a bunch of nerdy real estate investors together and our conversations are about like taxes.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, David and I talk a lot about, like, too much about taxes. We just like sit around and talk about taxes because that's just what nerdy.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting.
It is exciting. Like, it's like you're almost figuring out how to beat the system legally, of course,
yeah, you
know, and do it the right way because there's so many loopholes in our, yeah, system. That
it's like sports coaches getting together and talking about the rule book.
Yeah, exactly.
So you get really excited. Like, yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, you see, there's a new rule coming out that allows us to put our hands on the wide receivers within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage in the first 5 seconds. What play are we going to construct?
Yeah,
I literally did that December 28th. I bought my wife a brand new BMW for like, I don't know, $80,000 tax write-off. Depreciation, yep, took the, mm-hmm, whole thing right away just for the write-off. You know,
yeah. Yeah, there's tricks. Some fun tricks, yeah, you can get when you get fun in the taxes. Yeah. We can do a whole show just on that. All right. So you bought the house, you sold it, which a lot of people, I mean, Mindy Jensen, host of the Bigger Pockets Money podcast, she does that every 2 years and she has,
yeah,
for like,
yeah,
a couple of decades. Every 2 years, they fix up a house, sell it, yeah, make the profit, do it again and again and again.
So I'm all for using all the different sources of money I can get. And so bank money is the easiest money to get.
Yeah.
It's the cheapest and easiest. So we do that same strategy year after year as well. We do the 2 to 5 years,
yeah,
and we're into our $1.6 million house now, but that was because we bought and sold, yep, sold and kept on moving up in life. You know, a lot of times people are so scared to buy that first house because it's their dream house, but really it's just your starter home for that next dream house down the line.
Yeah.
And It's scary to pull that trigger. And Brandon, you're amazing at action. I think you're the best action taker I know.
Oh, keep going. Keep going. Keep coming. No.
But that's what all our weaknesses are, is that action. We learn, we know, we see, we read, and we know what we should do. But I think that separates people in life, is that the amount of action. You take 10 more action than I even do. And I love to do even more action, but
yeah, we could do a whole show just on people taking action, yeah. But man, well,
just
thank you.
Do it and figure it out later.
Yeah. jump out of the plane and build your parachute on the way down. Right. Yeah. That's very much the real estate investor motto. So, all right. So you bought that first property. What came next? Like investment wise, like where'd you end up going and how'd you start that, your portfolio and your business?
Yeah. So we bought that first property, and that was when the ball started rolling for me. That's when I started wanting to get into real estate and really seeing what the flipping world was all about. Started going to seminars. I signed up for a program that really boosted me to the next level. I'm very big on education.
Yeah.
Education is huge. I got an electrical engineering degree. I got a business degree, contractor's license, but that's nothing. The education is really what stepped me up to the next level, because we can do one or two houses a year maybe, yeah. But how do you do this in a large scale?
So this is something I wanted to talk to you about, because I know you have been a part of several groups and you pay for education. And you're part of a lot of groups that, you know, we have mutual friends, and you paid for one of the guru courses early on that we talk a lot of bad stuff about them, but you're one of the guys who came out and said, no, I did this and I got successful. So who is that right for? Who should spend the $10, $15, $20, $30, $50,000 on education and who shouldn't?
I mean, I think it's right for anyone as long as you can afford it and you're going to find that return, as long as you really are going to put into the work.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to do the work and you're going to take that action that they tell you. I mean, all these gurus have great starter tips, and, you know, great step-by-step how to do it. And, you know, we just started our own program too as well. And it's great for the new guy who wants to have his own step-by-step program on how to do this. Because real estate in general is very simple to understand, very straightforward.
Yeah.
It is truly, but it's the action part again is the hardest part of it all. It's very easy to grasp and understand. We fix a house, we paint it, make it nice, and we sell it. It, like, the concept is, you know, we can watch it on TV all night long. Obviously, there's a lot more to it, but it's the action part of doing, right?
Yeah, we just did this interview with Adam from the company called My Body Tutor. Yeah. And it's all about, you know, it was about fitness, but every analogy related to like business. And a big piece of it was like the knowledge alone isn't enough. Like we all know how to build a real estate business, right? It's very simple. You buy property, it goes up in value, you sell it eventually. It's fairly simple, but it's also simple to get a six pack. It's also simple to surf. It's also simple to do a lot of this stuff, but we just don't do it. It's not about knowledge, right? Knowledge in our head, it's not about that. It's about, do you take the daily consistent action needed to accomplish that goal, which obviously you've done now. I mean, walk us, like, so you started, you did the course, the program, you started learning, educating yourself. What came next?
So we did the course. At the time, there was no one flipping big in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And I had so much naysayers. I mean, family, friends, even close people to me saying, you can't do this in Hawaii. You can't scale Hawaii. It was too expensive. I mean, at that time, I mean, price points were like $700,000 for a house. I think we're about to hit $1 million for single family price points. In our
state. Just crossed it here in Maui. Yeah. Crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, how do you afford $1 million house and with an $80,000 salary a year is what our Hawaii averages.
Yep.
So it's crazy. And you hear a lot of naysayers from people. But then I started looking at those people and what they had in life. They were just normal people and they didn't have what I wanted. So I started listening to people who had millions, you know, multimillionaire people. And they started changing my mindset to how, you know, I was taught to learn and grow, because we were trained so much as kids. And I went to college and everything, but I think honestly, college is kind of wasted time. Yeah. I don't want to say it like that, but you know what I know what I mean. I think the real estate or the life lessons you learn is a lot more important.
I agree. Hey, David, I'm curious of your thoughts. I don't think you and I have ever talked about this. What do you think about college educations today?
I think the problem is when you assume everybody should go to college. That's where the problem comes from. For some people, it's great. For some people, it's terrible. It's like most things in life. You got to look at your motive. If you want to be in a profession that you're going to learn how to do that profession in college, it can be a good idea. Doctors, lawyers, engineers, accountants, where else? You're not going to go get an internship to learn how to be an engineer. You're probably going to need to go to college. If you don't know what you want to do, you don't have any idea, or you know, I want to be an entrepreneur, college might be a terrible idea. And if you're in the person who's saying, I don't care what I do, I don't know what I want to do, I just want to have an experience, I just want to go pay $80,000 to spend 4 years partying and goofing around, it's a terrible idea. College will only continue to get more expensive as the government continues to give grants to people to go there. Every single time the government says, we want more people to go to college, colleges say, great, let's up the tuition. And people just get under this crippling debt for reasons that they don't even understand why they did it, right? If you're going to go be a doctor, that you're going to pay that debt off. If you're going to go be a mechanic and make $60,000 a year, you'd have been way better off getting an internship at a mechanic place than going to college.
For 4 years and make, yeah, you'd be better off in 4 years.
Yeah.
Even a trade.
Take a person who learns how to invest in real estate, because that's what we're talking about. 4 years of interning underneath Brandon Turner at Open Door Capital, or you end up, like, they're going to be a ninja. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. You'd easily be a $100,000 breadwinner in 4 years.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, easily. So, okay. So you got educated. You decided, yeah. Did you start flipping or rentals? What came next?
So we got into the flipping business. I had a great wife, girlfriend at the time, who was really supportive. You know, she pushed me into the education program, helped me pay for it. You know, we maxed out credit cards, $35,000 in debt on credit cards. Oof. Off the bat, you know. But I took the steps,
yeah.
You know, I was very into vision boards, still am at the time, goal setting, still very am to this day, as you are too. And I think that's an intricate part of, you know, the where we're at today. But, you know, we did our first deal, super scared. We did a small little wholesale deal. It was great. But our first deal, we bought it $700,000. We sold it for just over $1 million. I was so scared.
Yeah.
So scared. I feel like that first deal, it just gets you over that hump.
Yep.
You know, it's such a scary moment, and as it should be, we're all scared. I'm still scared today on deals.
Yeah.
But if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. And I recognize that. I partnered on my first deal, which I recommend if, you know, if you're scared to partner, especially on a bigger deal, just for the security of being with somebody who's been there and done that, you know, finding the hard money, finding, this was back when hard money was like 12%, and they wouldn't lend to you unless you had deals under your belt. Back then, they wouldn't lend. It was very hard to.
But Indar, I don't want to share my profit. I want all of it. I want to be, you know, I want the 100 grand profit or whatever it is you're making. Like, well, what do we say to those people?
You can't do the deal and then you make nothing.
Exactly. So, like, exactly.
Make half or nothing.
Yep.
And that's my model today. Yeah. Even when I look at a deal, I'm like, well, somebody's going to do the deal and somebody's going to figure it out that deal. Is it going to be you or is it somebody else?
Ah, yeah, you know, that's good.
So that's always my model. Even on the hardest deals, I did some flips that were, everyone's like, oh, it's a tear down. My dad's a construction guy. My dad's like, oh, you got to tear that thing down and build new. It's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to figure it out and just watch me. And when I did those hard deals, like I'm talking like structural underneath the house, jacking it up, putting 4x12s and all that fun stuff and jacked it up and did it. After I did that deal, everything else was easy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You do those hard things in life, everything else is easy after that. Next flip, I was like, I got this.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? That's cool, man.
There's some gold there. That's a really, really good point. People will, in my life, will say, how do you work so much? That does come up sometimes. And I think it's because when I compare it to working 20-hour days as a police officer, nothing really seems that hard anymore. It doesn't feel hard to me is what I'm saying. If somebody else was maybe step into our shoes, they might feel very stressed and strained. Just like if I tried to go work out with The Rock, I'm sure I'd feel like overwhelmed, right? But he isn't feeling overwhelmed because he's been doing it. And so doing harder things will make the stuff that seems hard now feel easy. I think that's a great point. And the other one I like you said is that first deal is so important. And the minute you said, I bought a little box for us to live in, I knew that's why you were able to scale to where you are right now. I really think for so many people, buying a primary residence, just a house to live in instead of a house to rent, is 70% of what the momentum that they need to get into real estate investing. And they're sitting there renting a room from someone else or renting an apartment, and they're listening to Indar talk about buying $1.8 million houses, and they're saying, how could I ever do it? The answer is you do what he did when he was in your position, and you just buy your own house.
That's so funny. I was just in Home Depot yesterday, and somebody that follows me on Instagram came up to me, and he wanted to know like how to start flipping and buy these millionaires. I was like, dude, just go to the bank, get that little bit the bank will give you and buy something.
Yep.
That's your easiest thing to do right off the bat. And live in it. You're paying somebody else's mortgage. Might as well pay your own mortgage at least. House hack, whatever you want to be. But
yeah, that's such a Such a good point. Yeah. Cause I mean, like maybe at the end of your career, that first house isn't going to make you millions of dollars. It's not going to be a big piece of it. It doesn't matter. It's about you are changing your identity. I think just go back to identity. We just keep talking to identity, David, but you're changing your identity from somebody who is a passive, like walk through life, not taking control of their life to somebody who says, no, like I'm a financial person. I'm a adult. I'm a grown up. I put on my big boy pants.
It does make you an adult.
Right?
It
makes you an adult. And like that, like, yeah, it goes into that next like thing. So yeah, it's so important. Like, do you have to own a house in order to invest in real estate? Of course not. But it definitely gives you a different identity.
It does make you feel like it's funny because I sit with you on the porch sometimes with you guys on Sundays and I don't feel like a dog. I feel like a little kid when I'm hanging out with you guys. Like I think we're almost all 40 here. And
exactly.
Like a little kid just chatting it up.
Yeah. Yeah. We get into it. I love this like lanai conversation. So lanai, for those who don't know, is like a front porch in Hawaii. Yeah. And just like those moments. I mean, like David and I do them a lot. You and I have done them a number of times. Yeah. We're just like sit down and just talk late into the night about the stuff. Yeah.
And it's really cool to
I want to ask our listeners, if you are listening to this on YouTube, please comment. And if not, please go to Bigger Pockets. Is there demand for videos of lanai sessions with Brandon, David, Indar, whoever it is that's in Maui? If people want to hear that, maybe we'll record those and release them.
That's funny. That's not a bad idea.
It's a real personal moment. I mean, I sit there with you guys and I don't even want to Instagram because it's a personal friendship moment.
Yeah. Yeah. They are good moments.
I don't know. Well, we wouldn't release everything. I think there's quite a bit that would probably have to be edited out.
Some of your comments.
Yeah, exactly. David's real quick. We keep David's comments down a little bit. All right. So the first flip, how did you even come up with the money to buy a $700,000 property? You partnered, did they supply the money or how'd that work?
Oh man, I was so scared. I was so stressed about it. I sent a deal to everybody I knew, the program, my mentors and everyone. Everyone's telling me it's a deal.
Yeah.
I was so scared. I partnered with somebody, brought somebody in, and he was a broker for hard money, actually.
Okay.
And ended up 2 weeks before we're closing on our extension, he moved away. He pulled out his hard money, fell out. I have 12 grand in earnest money deposit at risk. 12 grand is a lot for me at that time, and I'm young. I was so scared. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to lose 12 grand. I'm so scared. I ended up figuring it out, and I problem solved, called other hard money lenders. I made it happen in 2 weeks. Now, we're on our extension. They're ready to shut us down and cancel the whole deal. And I'm like, I'm not losing 12 grand. So he moved away. I still paid him half and he still made his money and everything. I still honored that even though he moved away and kind of left that part of the deal. But I still am a man of integrity. It's kind of a Hawaii way, you know, no matter what. So he moved away and I had to figure it out on my own. And I found the money, man. I found it. The gap funding was from my little house I lived in it. We sold that. We made 90 grand off of that.
Yep.
And we sold that. And that was our gap fund. And we did that deal. Everything you can think of happened. You know, contractors left. We went over budget. Flip took longer than we wanted. But I, you know, just plowed through it and just figured it out.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I have electrical engineering background. And that's what an engineer does, figures it out.
Yep.
You know, you just figure it out. You roll with it. You can get stopped where you're at and people will tell you, no, you can't do it this way or you can't do it all. I always will go around and ask somebody else or I'll go around and find the right person to figure it out.
That's such a huge part of just success in general, isn't it? Like this idea of, I always think of like the movie or the TV show, like 24, let's say, right? 24, which was like a, you know, action show or any action movie, but like I like TV shows because like Jack Bauer is a hero, right? And like, there's a bomb going to go off and like the whole show is about him going to stop the bomb, right? And like the clock's ticking down and he finally stops the bomb and then he's like, oh, I saved the bomb. And then the person comes and goes, yeah, but your daughter just got kidnapped. He's like, no! And then he goes and like saves the daughter and it's like, well, that's great, but your wife just got taken.
And that all happens in like 9 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. Very quickly. But that's what real estate is so much like, isn't it? It's like this constant, like, okay, I'm going to diffuse this problem. And then, oh, now I got another problem. I got to go diffuse that one.
It is.
Yeah. And if you can get through it, like that's how you get it.
You
big
feel
portfolio.
Like you just tackle those little problems and like you just learn so much to go to the bigger one, like how you guys are just into these huge, massive deals now and just from learning. And
yeah.
There's no better way than to just do action, you know, to do a deal.
Yeah, just get into the bigger stuff. So what came next? I mean, what's the next few years of your career look like? Just lots of flipping?
Yep. So the first few years, you know, did one or two deals, I don't know, three or four the next year, five, six, seven the following year. And I think we got up to like, 20 to 30 last year, 29 last year. And these are $1 million deals, $15 million last year. I've done about $75 million in buys and sells of fix and flips. You know, in Hawaii, I hear mainly people and they're doing like 100 deals a month. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how do you do that? If I were to do 100 deals a month, it's crazy amount of money. Cause you know, our average price is,
it's about
$1 million, you know, I've done $3 million flips, crazy high end flips. So our profit margins are just a lot bigger.
Yeah. What is a typical profit that you aim for on a flip now?
I don't know if I should share this edit, but so yesterday I just closed and we made a $515,000.
Oh my gosh. You have to, we're not editing that out. You got to say that. Dude, that's amazing.
Well, don't come ask me for money.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Dude, like, okay. So, but I'm guessing that's not normal, one, right? Yeah. That's the biggest one.
No, our average KPIs right now are $89,000 a deal.
Okay.
So we do a lot of lower end stuff too, obviously.
Yeah. What do you like better, the $3 million flip or the $700,000 flip?
Oh, all day long, the cheap, easy ones.
Yeah. Okay.
On the high-end flips, you got to be very intricate in your designs. You know, you got to do accent lighting and you got to make it cater to higher end. So it's more involved. Profit margins can be bigger. You can enjoy that. We had a flip. We were going to make, I don't know, 600 or something on that. You know, this was a couple years ago. And then make it 100.
Wow.
But this was, you know, it was 700,000 rehab purchased at almost 2 million. So it was a big deal.
Yeah.
I was just happy to just make something.
I think you told us about that one on the Lanai. I remember this one.
Yeah. Yes.
That, what freaks me out about the big deal, and I love the idea of them, right? But I love the idea of buying the $2 million property, putting $1 million into it, selling it for four, like, oh, that just sounds so good. Right. But then like the market shifts and that four turns to three.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you're underwater.
Part about them.
Yep.
The ARVs, like we're looking at Kahala, like you're looking at like a 4 million to a 9 million.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you figure out this ARV?
It's so hard.
Yeah.
When there's not a lot of sales in an area.
That's exactly what it is. There's not a lot of comps to go by because there's a lot of people in Hawaii that want to buy a $700,000 house. I know that sounds crazy if you live in Kansas, but whatever your market is, there is a lower end price range that first time home buyers want to get into. There's incredible demand. So there's a ton of comps. It's very easy to come up with an ARV because you have all these past sales and you have a huge buyer pool. The more that you go up into expensive properties, the thinner the buyer pool gets because there's less people that can buy them and the easier it is to miss on what you thought. Just as someone who sells real estate, you put your house in market at 4 million, it sells for 3.2, happens way more than you would think. It does not happen where you put that house on for 700 and it sells for 520.
Yeah.
And that's the danger when you get into those higher priced homes.
Yes.
Yeah, it really
is. I find after about 1.5 million, it changes. People are generally cash buyers. You're not really financing as much. So your buyer pool gets a lot smaller.
Which is why you have the opportunity to make a $500,000 profit on a flip.
Yeah.
Because you could have also lost $100,000 on that one,
really,
or $500,000. Like, yeah,
it's really easy. Actually, where I made my killing, where my money was, I was actually doing out on the West Side, Waianae, back 2015. This is when like realtors in general were like, you want to buy a house out here? Like,
yeah.
It was kind of like the outskirts, not.
Yeah, it's a little Wild West out there.
Yeah, it's a Wild West. Yeah. But I made a killing out there because that was affordability.
Yep.
You know, we were selling houses at $400,000 or $500,000 at that time. And that's what the average guy, the wife who works, I don't know, as a nurse and the husband who does construction, that's what they can afford on our island. That was cheap. You know, $400,000, $500,000 was their cheapest you can find on our island and probably this island too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So we sold those. We were over asking back then all the time, you know, and still to this day.
Thing they don't talk about on all the flipping TV shows, right? All the flipping TV shows are like, we're going to do like the huge fancy things and every project's brand new and super high end. I don't think most people realize that flippers are actually like most of their money is made from just the very basic, usually the same carpet or flooring or paint. And it's just rinse and repeat.
You can tell all my flips is the exact same paint, the same colors. I got a same accent wall. It's something like your sea shed. It's actually similar. I do an accent wall. You find out it works and everyone loves it. And I find here in Hawaii compared to LA, in LA, you need to be more high end. You need to have the marble and the hardwoods. Yeah. You want to drive to LA, you can drive to LA from all these different cities compared to here in Hawaii. If you want to live in Kihei, you're going to forgo anything just to live in
Kihei. Yeah.
I know another flipper who does like Frigidaire and dollar 12 by 12 tiles, $1 million homes.
Yeah.
And he sells them all day long because nice, clean, new is generally what people want here in Hawaii. So that's another price point. My buddy who flips in LA, he's a big flipper. He kind of gives me crap about $1 million houses are not as nice as his. But I don't need to.
You don't need to,
My cost is probably more.
Yeah, for sure. Well, On that note, then, I want to talk a little bit about contractors because I know you've dealt with a lot of them. But before, are there people flipping bigger than you are on Oahu right now? Like,
no, I think I'm the largest here on Oahu for the last couple of years. There was somebody else who left, but yeah, we're the largest. We normally carry about, I think, 12 flips right now we got carrying. So that's our sweet spot. I don't know, 10 to 15 is where I like to carry. It's generally about 15 million.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah,
it's a lot of money to be carrying.
You know? And how are you financing all these flips? Are you still using hard money or do you raise money privately or what do you do for the financing?
Yeah. So we do, of course, hard money. I'm always looking for better and the best hard monies out there. I have a great relationship. I am generally the biggest client for a lot of these hard money lenders. Yeah. So they love working with us because my, you know, it's the same amount of work when I buy a $1 million house or they're buying a $200,000 house.
You're right, yeah.
I kind of throw my weight around with hard money and I like that relationship. And then I bring private money. I bring people in. We make little hooies. Love to throw that in here. You know, we don't call syndicates, we call little hooies on every property. And I pay out interest to all my investors. They love it. I love bringing people in and helping them make money. I brought this one guy in. He didn't know he had money in his house. So we got him a HELOC on his house. He took $300,000 out. We did a flip. It lasted 10 months. Paid him out about $35,000. The next day, he bought a brand new Lexus. So
that's like, cool.
Dude, you didn't even know you could have bought a brand new car this year and you got a brand new Lexus.
Yeah, like, that's cool.
It's such a rewarding feeling to when you make it a win for everybody else and you're helping out the community. You know, with what we do in real estate, I posted this the other day that we're helping out so many people from, you know, you got how many people are involved in our transactions, realtors, you know, appraisals and all the contractors. I mean, the list is crazy amount of people, how much money
we
generate into our society.
It's true. Yeah, we bring a lot of jobs. So speaking of contractors, let's talk about them. Hawaii is not known for being a super good contractor friendly place. In fact, we just hired a contractor to do some work on our condo, our month in Maui condo. And the guy specifically said, he's like, yeah, I show up every day. He's like, I'm not like other contractors. I show up every day. He goes, well, he literally said, I do have a surfing clause in my contract. And he did. He has a surfing clause in his contract that said if it's good waves, he will not be there that day.
That's
I'm like, that is so Hawaii. So how do you deal with finding good contractors, keeping good contractors? What's been your secret?
I mean, I have a contractor's license, so I have that background. I know what things cost. We used to break things down generally, but anyone out there who's hiring people, just know right off the bat, a good labor guy should be $250 a day. A lower end, maybe $150. Use that scale really fast to figure out how much labor rates will cost. Say you got three guys on a job, I don't know, $250 a day per guy. Ask them how long it's going to be. Say it's 8 weeks. They're going to tell you 8 weeks. Take $250 a day times 5 days a week times 8 weeks. That's your labor cost right off the bat. And then you can figure out material on your own side. A lot of times on our jobs, if we do material, we save money because now I'm controlling that material cost. I don't like to on bigger jobs. Sometimes it depends on per job, but I get 20% off Home Depot and I get a lot of discounts because of my volume. But finding a good contractor, this is a trick. I was at your house last time and on my way to airport, stopped at Home Depot, put a little cardboard sign up because we got that flip in Lahaina coming up.
Yeah.
I said, contractors needed, give me a call. Put a little cardboard sign on the stop sign. Probably got taken down in a couple of days, but my phone blew up.
Oh, no way. Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah,
it's such an easy trick to look. I mean, obviously you want to ask for referrals and find, you know, other people, Yelp and all those fun sites. But a lot of times it's just finding that right little guy.
On that note about the contractors and finding them and the cardboard sign, right? Last night I'm talking to Taro Yarber, who's a good buddy of mine. We were driving up to do some jujitsu class and I have to find a way to put in jujitsu, by the way, in every episode of the podcast just to make me feel good. So we're driving to this class and on the way home, I'm talking to him about just the difficulties in finding contractors right now. And I told him the surf guy contract. Yeah. And then I mentioned that this other guy I'm hiring right now is like super expensive. Like, I mean, like he's basically like $600 a day for labor, for labor only. And I'm like, that's just so much. And I'm like, and I said to him, I just can't find anybody else. And he looked at me and he goes, Brandon, be honest with yourself for a minute. Have you really done the work needed to find a contract to find it? And I'm like,
no, you haven't.
No, I called one guy.
Yeah.
I asked for a recommendation. He gave me two names.
Yeah.
I called both of them. One was busy and one gave me the bid.
I know what you mean.
Right? And he's like, your problem is not that you can't find a contractor. It's that you're being too lazy. And Taro's very direct like this. He's like, you're being too lazy to do the work you need to be doing to do a good job with this.
I'll give you credit because Maui is very hard to find contractors.
It is.
It's known. But, it's known.
Yeah, it's tough. But he's right. He's like, did you have your assistant call up every single tile and flooring and paint contractor?
contractor on the entire island and ask for recommendations and referrals for who like to work with?
Yeah.
No. Did you go to this site and did you do this? You call everyone in the Yellow Pages? No. And he's like, well, then don't tell me you can't find a good contractor because you haven't done the work yet. So, yeah, well, you're right, Carl.
You know, a little trick too is to give the contractors an added incentive, you know, say, you know, I got 5 more projects lined up for you. You guys want to start here with it? And even if you guys are brand new out there and you don't, you will. You've got 5 more you're looking for.
Yeah.
So just giving them that added incentive that it's not just one and done, you know, even with agents. And when I'm interviewing agents to work with, you know, you're not going to buy and sell one house for me. I want to buy and sell a house every week with you. You know, make yourself feel seem bigger than even you are if you're starting out.
Brad. That makes sense. That makes sense.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. All of us wish we had more time in the day, but if time was unlimited, what would you spend it doing? Having trouble? Therapy can help. With therapy, you can find what matters most to you and do more of it. Therapy can help you discover what you really want out of life and what your true priorities are. It's more than just talking about trauma or tough times. It can help empower you to accomplish more with less stress and more clarity. The best place to try therapy? BetterHelp. BetterHelp is entirely online. That means it fits your schedule and flexibility, and you don't have to drive through traffic to see your therapist. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/BP today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BP. You've heard us talk about it before. High interest rates are crushing real estate investors, leaving even some of the best investors in need of funding now. But with today's liquidity crisis, who can fill the demand? With Fundrise, America's largest direct-to-investor alternative asset manager, you have the opportunity to. Fundrise's new opportunistic private credit strategy was designed specifically for this new market environment. Fundrise supplies high-demand bridge financing on high-quality assets with creditworthy borrowers. Top real estate investors get the funding they need while you walk away getting paid a healthy interest rate. To date, Fundrise has completed more than $500 million worth of private credit deals with an average net interest of 10.8%, and they've already amassed a pipeline worth more than $300 million. Don't sit on the sidelines. You can take advantage of this unique window of opportunity while it lasts with Fundrise's new private credit strategy. Ready to start? Go to fundrise.com/pockets to learn more. That's FUNDRISE.com/pockets. This is a paid endorsement for Fundrise. Past performance is not indicative of future results. All investments can lead to loss.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right. Get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Yeah, all right. So I want to go to being the biggest flipper on Oahu, probably maybe in all of Hawaii in general. I don't know because Oahu's the biggest
island. Well, I flip on every island.
So. Okay, yeah. So you're probably the biggest flipper in Hawaii, right? So to go from that, and now you're also doing long-distance rental property investing. How did that start? Where did that come from?
I mean, relationships. Relationships are a huge part of this business.
Yeah.
You know, you hear a lot of gurus talk about how this avenue of real estate is great. Wholesaling is the only way to do it. Rehabbing is horrible.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that. I believe in every avenue of real estate makes you money.
Yep.
You know, as agents, they make a killing. There's $1 billion plus agents. There's every avenue I think is great. And I just have that mindset that I can do more than I can. You know, just listen to you for years, of course. I mean, I've been on Bigger Pockets before when it was free, actually. I don't know. That's a long time ago.
You can still get a free membership. Just, you know, we got a lot of pros now.
Yeah. No, you guys are awesome. I mean, so we're flipping for years now, and it starts where you want to put your money. What do you want to do in life? What do you, kind of legacy do you want? Yeah. You know, the family avenue is huge in my mindset. So having the legacy for kids, flipping is a job. I got to show up. I got to find deals. I got to do the work. I got to sell it. It's not legacy. You know, legacy to me, your real worth in life, wealth in life, is what you leave for your kids and your kids' kids, yeah, and, you know, your legacy that you leave on. So with that mindset, you know, and the Burr model, of course, the Burr model is awesome. We started developing rentals, and I used to have the mindset that Hawaii was too expensive. We couldn't do the Burr model. We couldn't do the 1% rule.
Yeah.
You know, I follow those rules. Those are like half to be from the bat. I used to think, oh, you can't do it in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And that mindset really was holding me back. The second I changed my thinking, there are deals out there. It just starts naturally flowing. You know what I mean? That rhythm of it all starts.
Yeah.
And now we have about 15 Burrs here in Hawaii. And then we're now in the mainland. We got 16 in Ohio, 11 in Pennsylvania. We're buying a 98 home deal in Missouri, 98 package wow. home deal. It's pretty exciting on that one. 24 in Texas coming. And then we're doing some wholesaling in a few other states, just wow. single family stuff. But the multifamily is exciting, and the single family stuff too is really exciting, because, you know, I have one deal that pays itself off in 18 years that's going to go to my son.
Yep.
So here you go, son.
Yep.
You know, 18 years.
That's awesome.
Now,
you do that.
You can either buy it, you can sell it, you can manage it, whatever. It's such a life learning lesson for my son, I feel like.
That. Yeah, I did the same thing for Rosie, and now I'm doing it for Wilder. I just got a property under contract in Bangor, Maine, actually.
Yeah.
And I chose Bangor because, again, it goes back to team and relationships. Like, I have a good contract. I mean, a good, well, contractor too, but I have a good property manager there.
Ryan's up there.
Ryan was up there. And then so Jesse McHugh is up there, and Jesse's my property manager, and he's got all the contractor relationships. Yeah. And so like it's a building. I have a core four in Maine.
I mean, you got rock stars around you, man. Yeah. Ryan Murdoch, if you listen, man, awesome. He's a beast. I love that guy.
Yeah, me too. I know Ryan's awesome. So, all right. So what else have you found? What's worked well in terms of long distance investing? When you live in an expensive market, which a lot of our listeners do, they're in LA, New York, San Francisco, whatever, and they want to invest in the Midwest. Like what's worked really well for you? And what are some of the things that have been difficult in learning lessons?
I mean, the biggest thing on all of real estate is trusting the numbers. I mean, it's a number business. I think we're all really comfortable with numbers and trusting it. It's almost like a data game. If the numbers work, if the market is right, you got to trust that intuition. And then, of course, finding the right people on the ground, finding the right agent over there, finding the right partnership in that area, whatever it may be. It's just the act of figuring it out. And I'm scared too myself. I'm scared jumping in different markets. I'm always scared. But when I have a right person on my team or together with me, somebody I trust, whatever, maybe that knows that market well or knows that area well, I vet him, of course. You know, I make sure he's a good guy. Then I'll act and I'll jump in with them. Or I just learn that market and I really fall in love with that market. Or I follow you guys, man. You guys, you guys set tones for markets. I mean, I think everyone and their mother's in Ohio or has something in Ohio, right? I mean, we're jumping all over those kind of markets where people generally are. And of course, we do our own research and check it out. But, you know, it's really a legacy for the kids. Yeah, cash flow is great.
Yeah.
And I love cash flow. I love that check in the mail. It's a great feeling because flips, especially when you start doing a lot of flips, it's a lot to manage because a lot of money goes out. I mean, yes, you can do big in Hawaii, but man, I was paying $70,000 a month in mortgages. I would be spending $150,000 a week just like that. And it was no big deal, still is not. But managing that in Hawaii is huge. And it's a lot of money flowing. It could be stressful. So enjoying the cash flow of rental, it's cake. You know, it's like, I love that little extra. But, you know, talking about rentals, a little tidbit for all you people out there, it's not about the cash flow of the rental. It's everything else that you get from it. You know, the appreciation, silent bank account, that thing is going up in value generally in most states. Yep. You know, that's huge. That's
the loans getting paid off over time.
And your loans getting paid off, the house hacking, every other avenue, I think, is amazing. And for me now, it's the write-off.
Yeah. You know,
it's the write-offs. I mean, it allows me to flip more and do more and write everything off. Doing a cost seg.
Cost segregation studies, they're amazing.
Yeah. That's a high level thing, you know, like it's a common thing for us, but a lot of people don't understand what a cost seg is, and it's worth every dollar. And actually, I think you guys all should do one before, I don't know, Biden, I heard, might be getting rid of it.
Yeah, there's some changes coming. So yeah, I'm
Yeah. So if you do it now and you have it, you can take it for years to come.
But yeah, we do those every year. It's been really good.
It's worth the money. It costs money.
Indar, can we ask you, first off, what's a cost seg? How have you used them before? And then let's get into some of the other write-offs that you mentioned for just people that are thinking, really, to me, this is like the carrot that makes you want to get into it. Right? Like the real estate ends up funding your entire life in many ways, not just from cash flow, but literally your business can pay for all the things that you want to do and it becomes a write-off. So I'd like to give as many examples as we can for the listeners of ways we can do that legally.
The government really makes an incentive to be a real estate agent. I mean, a real estate person in general, because we are bringing a lot of money back into our economy, as we were talking about. And just writing off a depreciation, you can write off the house value, excluding the land. You can divide that by 27.5, and you can write that off every year. You can write that off of any dollar you make. Say you make $100,000, you write off $100,000. And the cool thing I love about it is it shows I made $100,000, but I don't pay any taxes. So when you go to the bank, you're still showing $100,000 because a lot of times we have to work with banks.
Yep.
Then whatever, cost seg's awesome. So a cost segregation, you'll pay a company to come out into your property, multifamily. They do single families too. Generally, single family is, I think, 600 to 1,000, depending on the home, of course. They'll come out and they'll give you a valuation of the windows, the doors, all the smaller things that go down in value slowly over time, you know, generally maybe 5 years or something. Yep. And they'll give you a write-off for those items, which now you can take and use as a depreciating asset against the money you make. You can write off that cost that it costs you to pay for those guys to come out and do it. And you can take that and use that for the next 5 to year, whatever, how many years you get it for.
Yeah.
You know, those two assets are great. And then we did also, was it a tax code 179, I think it is, the bonus depreciation.
Oh, yep. We do the same thing.
Yeah. Yep. For my cars. So if your car is over 6,000 pounds, you can write it off as long as it's being used for work. So my wife's a real estate full-time agent and her vehicle is used for work. You can write off G-Wagons. They're over 6,000 pounds. I think Gerdon talks about that.
Yeah.
Anything over 6,000 pounds. And you can take the full write-off, 80%, whatever it may be that you use for work, and write it off for that whole year. So we took that $80,000 vehicle and now I didn't have to pay 80 grand in taxes. So if I'm in a 30% tax credit, whatever I have to pay, that's $20,000 I just saved me, you know, in paying taxes. So really that 80 grand vehicle was like 60 grand.
Yep.
If you think about it.
Yeah, that's cool.
And if you have a good accountant, they're teaching you things, and I'm not an accountant, so please check with them all the exact codes, throw that disclaimer out there, but figuring out all those little things at the end of the year, you know, we did it December 28th at the end of the year. Okay. We got to do a write-off. So we did it real quick and
that's cool.
Bought the new car.
I think we should highlight, when I first heard about this before I got into, I was just a police officer that bought rental property. I didn't really have it set up like a business. And I heard people talk about loopholes, and that just that phrase sounds immoral. It sounds wrong. Like you're avoiding taxes, right?
Well, it's not.
No, taxes and tax breaks are just incentives that the government creates to incentivize a certain behavior. It's no different than when you tell your kid, if you clean your room, then you can have an ice cream cone. You're trying to get them to clean their room, right? It's not a loophole that that little kid gets ice cream just because they clean their room. It's something that's set up. So when we as real estate investors invest in this asset class, we are taking on risk. We could lose money. You can't lose money going to work and earning a W-2. That's why you get taxed the hardest. It's the safest, but there's actually risk associated with what we're doing. So to offset that risk, which the government wants you doing because you're creating jobs for lots of people. Look at the people we've talked about just now with Indar's story. We've created jobs for contractors, for CPAs, for real estate agents, for banks, for people that the banks hire, for underwriters that the banks hire, for people that make the materials that you go buy at Home Depot. I could go on forever, but every time you flip a house, you are putting money in a ton of people's pockets. So of course the government wants you to do that. Did you want to comment on that, Indar?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. The government wants you to spend money and bring money back into the economy.
Yeah.
They get taxed on it. So that same dollar, I followed this somewhere, that like your dollar bill gets taxed so many different times as it exchange hands. So the incentive is you're spending money back into the economy. You know, we will reward you for that. You are creating jobs.
So the concept of depreciation, for example, it's very confusing because it's an accounting term. It is not the opposite of appreciation. And we throw that around. We say the house appreciates. Well, depreciate sounds like it loses value. It's not the case. It's losing structural integrity. Eventually, that house that you bought will fall apart and break apart. Now,
the value... 27.5 years.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly what they're saying. In 27 and a half years, this property should be...
Who came up with the half? That's what I always wondered.
Yeah, like, we're not half.
Like, I would have completely understood if somebody was like 28 years or 30 years.
Round up.
200 years ago... Houses didn't last as long. Thank God they haven't upgraded that to like 100 years. That would be terrible if they did.
Some
that.
Of these houses here in Hawaii are like that.
Yes, yeah. So, oh, so your house was built 27 years ago. We got half a year left, honey. Half a year left. Yes.
So depreciation is the benefit you get because the government recognizes your property is slowly falling apart, and so we're going to give you 1/27.5 or whatever you say that of this thing's value back. You're not going to pay taxes on the money that made. Now the way it works out because of inflation is you get the best of both worlds. Your house falls apart, so you get depreciation, but it also increases in value, and increases in value so fast that you can take the equity, put it back in the house, and keep it from falling apart. You can keep reinvesting. But I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not like free money. There is risk associated. There is work associated. There's a reason they're incentivizing investors this way. But if you are smart, you can take the things that you normally paid for in your everyday life, run them through your business instead and write them off. So the reason a realtor can write off a G-Wagon over 6,000 pounds or whatever, and they get to take 100% of the cost and they can write it off is because they got to drive around all the time for work. So if they have this big, heavy, expensive car that uses up a lot of gas and needs a lot of maintenance, they can write off the total value of it because it's going to cost them more money.
Well, you think about that. The incentive is if you spend money, we will let you write it off. Yeah. So they want you to spend money. It generates our economy so much money.
Yeah.
So they
want. Now we don't want, as financially wise people, we don't want to just be throwing money everywhere. So the idea is you take money that you already were going to spend and you run it through your real estate business so that you limit the taxes that you pay. We're not saying go buy a Land Rover just because you have to spend money on something. But if you're going to buy a BMW, it would be better to run it through your business and write it off than it would be to buy it personally and get nothing back.
And I shop at Home Depot for every toilet paper and soap that I need for my
house. There you go. Yeah. All right. So what we got to slowly begin wrapping this thing up now, but a couple of things I want to get to.
I got some ninja tips though.
Please, yeah. I read that somewhere they said you got ninja tips. So why don't we go over those? I don't know how to get into that, but you just nailed it. So let's go into ninja tips. Go ahead.
We missed the whole backstory of my life. So I grew up in a very poor water catchment in Pune. I was born in the jungle on a pot farm. We grew bananas. Very poor.
Pot farm.
My parents, this is 70s.
Yeah, okay.
that was legal in back then. Like no one cared in Hilo in the jungle. So my parents grew up that.
And that's on the Big Island, right?
It's on the Big Island in Pune. Okay, yeah. Way out in the boonies.
I mean, yeah, that's sticks right there.
It's in the sticks. I mean, I was born on the farm. I was born that way. You know, water catchment and a generator is how we lived. So I grew up that way. So I am constantly into cost saving and living below my means. I like to try to because I think I was raised that way with less. Now we have more. So I'm constantly looking for little ninja chips, little tricks and tricks of the trade that I learn from each other. And I always like take notes. So let me dive into a couple like good ones that people will love. A huge, huge one. So when we sell a house, before we sold, we'll hire a home inspector. Normally, that's done after you sell a house and you hire a home inspection then, and they come back at you with, you know, hey, fix this, give us a credit for that. This is generally huge when you're doing $3.5 million house because that buyer in general is a savvy person. He's buying $3.5 million house. He's a savvy dude. He knows his stuff in life. So he's going to come at you for credits. They're going to ask for stuff. If you stop him in your tracks, so I get a home inspection to run through the house, I'm not going to put on the suit and crawl through the attic. I'm not going to look every nook and cranny. You know, I try to. So I pay for a home inspection, $700 for a higher end home. It's worth it. Then I give that to my contractor. Here you go. Here's your punch list.
I love it.
You know what I mean? So he's so got good. That, what is that, 80 pages there, David? You guys get those things all the time.
And that's the same thing that I do, exactly like you said. It's funny you mentioned that. What I actually started doing when I was burning at high volume is I would have the home inspector and the handyman contractor go at the same time. And I would have the home inspector meet with them and he would point out stuff. The contractor would then give me a bid for specifically what it was and just give me a list of, hey, I could do this for this much money. And I could just go through and pick like what I want on the menu. Ooh, those chicken nachos sound good. I'll take that. That looks a little too expensive. I don't need that.
I don't even pay my guys until they finish the work. And I make it like that because I mean, it comes down to they're going to ask for you for a credit.
Yep.
If you kind of caught everything, they'll still maybe find some little things. But if you caught all the big stuff, you know, you're saving thousands of dollars generally.
Yeah, and they're going to come after you.
Because a good realtor is going to ask for credit. I always ask for credit on a buy. No matter what, I ask for credit. The little tip out there, no matter what, ask for credit.
Yeah,
when they don't say ask for, when they say you can't, ask for credit.
Yeah, here, let me explain why this is. So when you're in negotiation with somebody, you have an let's say you're selling a house to me and I'm buying it.
Yep.
So I go in there and I want to buy this property for $1 million. I'm going to find things wrong with the property, right? So I'm going to then go to you and say, man, this isn't good. The foundation had a little bit of crack over here. I want $30,000. Best case scenario, you say yes. Worst case scenario, you say no. Either way, I am in no different position.
Yeah. You still can do the deal.
I still can do the deal legally. I have the right to buy the deal.
I always ask. I had a deal one time that, pictures look great. We put an offer and the numbers look great. When I actually went and looked at the property, mold, mildew, worst case, they covered it all up with great pictures. I was going to walk away from the deal, told the realtor, give me $50,000, I'll do the deal. Yep. I didn't think we're going to get it. He gave me a $50,000 credit. I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, you never know. Yeah. Like, there's zero risk and downside to asking for things. And we're not saying go and lock up properties and be a jerk and then negotiate them down 3 weeks into the process. That would give you a bad reputation in the industry. But like, they're going to be legit problems that come up every time.
Bring in a contractor, bring in a termite guy, get a mold guy. Mold is a huge one, because it's a big deal, mold. And get their costs presented to them. And now that agent has to disclose that when they sell it later on, too.
When people say they don't get inspectors, like home inspectors, when they buy a property, like, well, I've been doing this a long time. I don't need a home inspector. I'm like, they're going to find something that's going to pay for themselves, guaranteed. They're going to find something and it's going to be like, oh yeah, that's $1,000 thing. Okay, ask for the $1,000 credit. And now you just got that thing fixed and it paid for your home inspection and then some.
And generally, I ask for double whatever it's going to cost because they always meet me halfway.
They do. Yeah.
So I always ask for double.
Yeah, there you go.
Halfway.
Yeah, knowing that everyone negotiates that way, helps a lot. All right. Yeah.
Let me bring some clarity until why this works. When you ask for a credit, what you're really doing is you're saying, I have an inspection contingency that will allow me to back out of this deal. I have found something. Now, you don't always say these words. You don't go threaten. I'm backing out if you don't give it, but it is implied in the offer. If you say no to this credit for this mildew, I may back out of the deal completely. That's the formality of what you're doing when you make a request for a credit. And they know that. The seller's hearing, oh man, if I say no, they might back out of the deal. That means I got to put my house back on the market. That means I got to wait another 45 days for another buyer. And then I got to go through another 30-day escrow. And that's going to cost me all this money. And the house that I just went and put under contract, I might lose that too. So me having a really, really good agent, like Gundar's wife understands, they feel out that situation. Realtors are stupid. They talk way too much. People do that all the time. All the time we start building rapport. They're like, oh my God, our clients are so happy. They just put their next house under contract in Texas and they can't wait to move. And I'm like, I don't know why you told me that, but I'm about to tell my client that we're asking.
Extend that J1 another 2 weeks. Now you just have them locked up for a month. They're so invested in that sale already after a month.
Yeah,
you're asking for 30.
Only caveat I will add is in very specific markets, which we happen to be in right now in many places, it can be so hot that they could say no to you, put their house back on the market, sell it to somebody else for more.
It's got to be a buyer's market. Buyer's market.
Buyer's market or even a neutral market, you could get a little bit. But when we say it doesn't hurt to ask, it could hurt to ask if you don't have a contingency to back out of the deal. They kick you out of contract and then they go sell to someone else. So in that circumstance, be careful about asking for too much, but in any other circumstance, absolutely go see what you can get.
As long as during the inspection phase of J1 here in Hawaii.
As long as you're in that phase, like you can ask for it. And if they say no, it doesn't void the contract.
That's
the key. It's a one-sided, like the inspection period is one-way road here.
When you have it.
More ninja tips. I got a bunch.
You said J1. I just want to confirm. In the Hawaii contract, the J1 is the part of the contract that says you have this long to do your inspections.
Normally 14 days. I use 14 days.
There you go. That's what the standard term typically is. I have a team in Hawaii that helps people out there. And so we definitely go over this training of how, like Indar said, that was perfect. Extend it another 2 weeks, get them on the hook even longer. Now they're more likely to say yes to what you're asking for because they're sort of being held hostage. Like Brandon, you're dead on. They only benefit the buyer.
And actually having a good agent like you're talking about is key to it all because they're negotiating on your behalf. These are MLS transactions we're talking about. And it's worth it to have. It's worth it.
Before you go on to the other ninja tips, how are you finding deals today? I should have asked you that earlier.
So my KPI is actually our 63% agents. We do a lot of online auctions. We got the one over here in Lahaina on an online auction. Yeah. I have a great relationship with them. They actually called me this is, I think it was auction.com, called me to let me know the deal is coming up. So they let me know inside. We have our hard money lenders. We got an inside track to some of their foreclosures. They're giving us first right. And we're wholetailing those deals across the United States. Those are awesome. Of course, we got some cold callers, PPC. In Hawaii, I think you got to do it all.
Yeah,
I hear so much in the States like, oh, we're experts at short sale or we're expert at one thing. In Hawaii, you got to be kind of a master of everything, because I'll be looking on the MLS and I'll get a deal from, we do courtroom steps auctions. So I'll get a deal over there. Like oftentimes is where I'm not looking, I get deals. You got to kind of look everywhere for a deal. You can't just, to me, be a master in one little spot, because deals will come, you know, relationships, bandit signs. We do doing bandit signs with my wife, man.
She doesn't like that.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
I'm so nervous in getting out and
getting the signs out there.
Somebody to do that kind of stuff.
But yeah, I can get the phone ringing. And it makes sense, because like, especially in Hawaii, like there's probably more houses like in like Oakland than they're all in all of Hawaii, right? Like, or at least Oahu. Like, there's probably more like houses in like one city, or LA, I'm sure, has way more. You can get really niche. But yeah, if you're in a smaller market, like Hawaii is a smaller market, Oahu is a smaller market.
I mean, Hawaii is a relationship business market. I mean, everybody knows everybody. You walk down the street, hey, your friends with your uncles with that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I am born and raised here, and I'm going to leave my kids to live here in life, you know, down the line. So I want to keep those relationships really, really important, you know. So that's how we actually grew so much, is the relationships. And so much so, even on deals, I've lost on 2.5 deals in my life. I've had an $80,000 loss.
Wow.
Kicked me in the butt on that one for a year. Still pay back every investor, still made everybody money, because I valued, this was my third deal ever, I valued the relationships I would keep with those investors who are still investing with me today. You know, every other person got paid on that deal no matter what, because relationships are far more important than a monetary value, you know,
of
doing business. And in Hawaii, so much so. You don't want your name, your reputation to ever go bad. And it's extremely important to me in Hawaii too, because that's, you know, it's my kids' names. It's our family.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. Yeah. All right, what else you got for ninja tips? First one, hire a home inspector when done. What else you got?
Knowing your daily holding costs. So on all our deals, we know our numbers. We know our numbers down to T. So an average is about $300 a day, a holding cost per house.
Yeah.
So when we go to sell the house, I will give $100 a day credit if they can close sooner.
Smart, yeah.
So now that seller, who's often not in control of the deal, a lot of times it's the mortgage lender, you know, we're pushing. He will push that mortgage lender to close sooner, because he's going to make $100.
Yep.
It's not really losing me money. You think it is, but when you do the math,
yeah, it's not.
It's saving you money. You know, saving a couple $100 a day, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm such a Chang person. And I'm always fighting for every dollar.
Yeah.
And, you know, pushing them to close sooner, get the deal close sooner. Just a quick, easy ninja. Hey, I'll give you $100 a day if you can close a day sooner or a couple days sooner. And they'll push the lender in return. And a lot of times they want to move in faster anyway. So, you know, that's a cool little trick to try out. Huge ninja trick is, we're all scared at this deal. We're all scared in this business. The numbers are huge. It's very life-changing what we do. You know, could change it for better or worse. But to educate yourself and to understand a deal, be the expert in that market. When I look at a deal, I know everything that's going to happen in that neighborhood. I know what's active, what's selling, what's coming up. When an agent talks to me, I know what that neighborhood is. You know, knowing my market, you know, getting that map behind you and plotting your price points in that market, being that expert in that market, you know, it's your money at stake. It's nobody else's money. Even if you got hard money, whatever, it's your money at stake. And I treat it like that. And I make sure I am that expert in that market. You want to be.
Yeah.
You want to know everything about that. And then with that said, get out there and write an offer. Yeah, I know so much people are out there. They're in the analysis paralysis phase, analyzing deals, looking at deals, but they don't take the time to write that offer.
Mm-hmm.
I tell so many people, if you spent an hour analyzing a deal, throw that offer out there.
Yep.
And write an offer. Zero offers equals no deals. For us, our KPIs are 22 offers equals a deal. So I'm just writing an offer to get to 22.
Yep.
I'm just throwing an offer. I need to get to 22.
Yeah.
So I write offers and forget it and move on.
Yep.
Even if you don't think you're going to get it, we've had deals 6 months later. Hey, is your offer still good? A lot of times people don't realize that they can't get bank financing because their house is in such bad shape or whatever circumstances. So for us, forget it and move on. Worst case, your numbers are off, you have J1 to get out. You have an inspection period to knock that price down if you are off. Submit it and forget it.
I love it.
And move on.
This is what I've been teaching people on BiggerPockets webinars for 5 years now. I'm like, it's a very simple funnel. You get leads that come in and you just talk about, you got to do a variety of things if you're in a small market, especially. So get your direct mail, your cold call, and your agents, get that in. You get leads, then you analyze them, run the numbers, make an offer, or I say pursue them because it fits with the LAPS funnel, L-A-P-S. Yeah. So leads, analysis, pursue, and then you will get success. It might be 1 out of 10, 1 out of 20, 1 out of 30. Yeah. Doesn't matter. I mean, it matters. You can try to improve those numbers over time. But the fact is, it is a funnel. And I love the fact that you know your KPIs. That just tells me, like, this is not a mystery. It's not a surprise that you're a successful flipper because you're doing the things that successful flippers do. The numbers, like, this is a numbers game.
So. I am Excel spreadsheet galore guy.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
But no, but you don't get your first deal overnight.
Yeah,
I mean, I worked so hard to get my first deal. It took me 9 months to get my first deal. And I remember it was like 6 months in. I was so heartbroken. I got a deal locked up. It was great. I fell in love with it 2 days before closing, but it fell out. And whatever happened, it happened. Oh man, I was so heartbroken. And most people would stop kind of from there. But I took that experience of learning what escrow was, learning the lingo. And you know, we're sitting here talking, but real estate's got its own lingo, its own language. Yeah. You know, we're talking about, I don't know, escrows and J1s and KPIs and all this stuff. Yep. It's its own lingo. It's its own world that comes naturally to us. But you guys remember back in the day, no idea what that was.
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah.
And so just going through escrow and learning about the process of it all was worth it in every sentence.
Like, it's like trying to learn how to lift weights at the gym without going to the gym.
Yeah.
You're like, you can read a book that says what a leg press is or whatever, you know, or what a squat rack is.
Yeah.
But like, that's not the same as going there, looking at it, touching it, feeling it, throwing pens around your office. Yeah. Like,
stop throwing a pen at me.
Yeah, sorry, throwing a pen at you. I get excited about this. So like, that's the downfall of being in the seashed with me is you get pens thrown at you. So everyone be warned. Yes. The difference is showing up, going to the gym, not knowing what you're doing some stuff, pushing and pulling some levers and getting yelled at. And that's fine. You got to do it, man. You got to do it.
Something about it.
Yeah.
You know, I'll comment on the reason that we like funnels. It gives you structure and direction for what you're trying to accomplish and to learn. We do the same thing in my real estate team. We have 5 steps to taking a person and turning them into a closing. And every step where we classify where you are, there's a tool that we use to move them from that step to the next one. Because we realize it's the same freaking process over and over. And investing, like Brandon has the LAPS funnel, leads, analyze, pursue, and then success. If you force yourself to be disciplined enough to do that, which is what Indar has done, what you find is that your brain understands what it's trying to accomplish a lot easier. Well, we need leads. That's the first thing. Then Indar was talking earlier, you got to get leads from everywhere. You got to go here. You got to go there. Oahu's not big enough. You have to be able to do direct mail. He has figured out what works in Hawaii to fill up a funnel of leads, people that are interested in selling their property. So when people say, what's my first step? What do I do? You're never going to know where to start if you don't understand that you got to go to the top of that funnel.
Yep.
And you're going to take some time going through a different ways that you can get a lead. Then once you get one, what do you have to do? You analyze it. That's where we talk about having spreadsheets, hitting numbers, stuff like the 1% rule pops up, things like cash flow. All of that is a part of the analyzation section of the funnel. And then there's pursue, write offers, ask people, like direct conversations with sellers where we're going over negotiation tactics and ways you can bring stuff up. That's all part of the pursuit process. That's why Indar said, just write the offer, because the feedback you get will improve your knowledge in the pursuit section of the funnel. And then there's the success, right? So I really like that because real estate can seem overwhelming with all these different options. But if you force yourself to view it from this funnel thing, you start to recognize, hey, I just got to get these 3 steps down, finding leads, analyzing them, and pursuing them. And when my skills in those areas reach the right point, boom, stuff will start making it from its way from the top of the funnel down.
Yeah.
Let me jump through some ninja tips before we
run out of
time. I got a bunch. I'm just going to go through them really fast.
All right, take them
quickly. I'll just touch on them. People can do some research on their own. On them. Be a professional money finder. That's the name of the game. Yeah. That's how you're huge. Donald Trump's huge. Everyone. They're experts at finding
huge
money. Yeah.
Huge.
Huge. You know, working with banks, getting HELOCs on your own personal, getting personal lines of credit. Everyone here can go to the bank right now and get a line of credit with a small bank. Go to a small bank and get a $50,000 line of credit.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about that one, it's unsecured line of credit, which is you don't need any collateral. You can use that as your down funding, your gap funding later on. The trick for that one is if the bank gives you $50,000, ask for $25,000. Ask for less and you can up it later. But you get in a lot easier when you get asked for less. They're super easy to get lines of credit with a bank. And it's a great way to get your gap going on. And then learn the credit card game. When we were flipping for at the beginning, we used the credit card game. You know, I have maybe 150,000 line of credit with my credit cards. And we used that for our rehab. You know, did the whole points fun part of it all. There's a website called Plastic, P-L-A-S-T-I-Q, I think it is. And you can take money out of your credit card. They charge you, but it's a way to get cash because that's the name of the game is finding, developing. How do you find money? How do you find money? Of course, working with hard money investors. You know, we love working more with private money investors. That's where we're at today. We're trying to find more investors to do bigger things. But knowing other sources of money, you know, stay away from, if you guys ever hear somebody talking about factor rates, it's hard to figure out who's a scam and who's not out there. Ask around, you know, go on Bigger Pockets. I did that mid-March, COVID started. No, every lender was shut down. Yep. Every lender was shut down. I went on to Bigger Pockets. I BCC'd every hard money you had on there. I had four deals lined up and everyone was shut down. I was the largest client. I don't want to say their name, but I was the largest client. They shut down because no one knew what was going to happen. I went on Bigger Pockets. I BCC'd, I think, I gave up after like 30 plus lenders. And I same email to all of them. Hey, I got these deals lined up. Can you work it? Can you make this happen? I knew I'd be well off. And those deals turned out to be mega awesome deal. But, you know, I was professional money finder. I figured out how to find money and
make it work. Hey, by the way, everybody, if you're looking for the hard money lenders, we have a free, what he's talking about, there's a directory on Bigger Pockets called the Hard Money Lender Directory. Totally free. Just go to biggerpockets.com/hardmoneylenders.
It's all on there. Another quick little tip before we run out of time is front load your deals. So when I'm talking about front loading, so if you guys are up into fix and flips, when you start getting to higher end fix and flips, this is super, super important. And I learned a hard way. I learned this really hurt when I was kind of scaling from, I don't know, 7 to 8 deals into 14, 15 deals. It's a big jump. So we get our rehab funds. Most of our general rehabs are, I don't know, $100,000. Your hard money lender will fund 100% of your rehab, but you have to do the work first before they will give you money. A lot of times at the beginning of a rehab, a lot of costs go in the beginning. You don't show it. Like a lot of money is spent, generally maybe $30,000 is spent up front before you can kind of see any work done. So when you times that 30 grand by 15 deals, that's a lot of money I didn't account for. I accounted that, okay, my hard money is giving me 100% of rehab. I never had to come up with that money, but then I didn't realize I am paying 30 grand for all those sales. So what we started doing, and my hard money taught me this, is front load it. You know, make those items, because I'm giving the rehab budgets, make those items that you do up front cost more. So demo now costs 20,000. I was super honest back then. I was like, oh, demo's only 5 grand. Windows are only 3 grand. So I front load those items up front to cost more. And that way I can get money sooner to carry all of this. So when you're carrying 15 homes, you know, 30 grand out piece, and I didn't account for that money, you know, you're very stretched.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part of the business. So front loading for any fix and flippers out there who want to scale in a high market, you know, is extremely, extremely important. So you're not just caught with your pants down per se, you know, with trying to figure out the money part of it all. It's extremely difficult.
It makes sense.
And, you know, there's a lot of other little things, working, networking, and networking, and go to more networking events. Yeah. It's the name of the business. You know, if you're not doing it, you need to be doing it. I like to learn everything on every little trade. Remember, I had a plumber once come on to a job, and he was like, a lot of times if you get a high cost, it's because that guy is busy. Nothing personal. He's just got too much work going on.
Sure, supply and demand.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, it's 9 grand to do this. I was like, I did plumbing before. I was like, no, you just got to sweat this and do that. And he's like, he kind of backtracked. He's like, what? How'd you know that?
Yeah.
He's like, because I did it. And I knew enough about every little trade. I said, see you later. I'm going to pick somebody else. But knowing enough a little about every trade is useful. It's useful, you know, especially in life, I think, in general. And kind of my last favorite point I love to know and I love to share is know your net worth. Know your net worth in life and what's your time worth. Because a lot of times when I was first starting off, I love construction. I got my tools. I love being involved. I love jumping on a project and doing, you know, got my saw and cutting and drill. It's fun as I don't know, something about being a man. I don't know, something about that kind of, I grew up like that.
I like that stuff too.
And it's cool to jump in. But is my time really valued at that? When I'm paying a guy 30 bucks an hour, is my time 30 bucks an hour? No, it's 500 bucks an hour. Yep. You know, that's what we need to be at. That's my goal. If, you know,
So. That concept changed my life of just thinking like, what task am I doing? Yes. What could I pay someone else to do that for? $20 an hour, $50 an hour? I should not be doing it.
Yeah. I love doing the yard stuff, actually. Yeah. I like getting out and laying grass.
Yeah.
It's my cheapest labor, guys.
Yeah. It is the cheapest job. Yeah.
I like yards for
sure. There is something to like doing stuff that you like doing, obviously, as well. Like, because that's your time.
I jump in now here and there for an hour or two because something about it clears my mind sometimes.
Yeah.
Actually, talking about clearing my mind, I paddle between islands and that can be a whole nother subject.
Oh, wow.
I do a race from Molokai to Oahu, actually.
No way.
I'm talking about clearing your mind there.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's a huge thing in Hawaii for anyone who doesn't know about paddling and the community that it's involved. But it's a big life changing event when I got into paddling and pushing your body to the next limit. And I mean, literally when we paddle, we don't even see the next island. You just see the horizon often and you're like, where is Oahu?
Yeah.
How far am I going? It's 30 to 42 miles is the different races. And it's pretty crazy to push yourself to the next limit. And that's what I think we do in this business. You know, we could be content where we're at in life, right? We're fine. We can stop tomorrow and live a beautiful life. But it's not about that. It's about the art of the deal. It's about pushing yourself to the next limit. You know, something, I don't know what it is. I don't know, David, could you tell me what it is? Like, there's something more in us to want more. You know what I mean? If we were to stop today, like, you know, we would be fine.
Yeah.
It's because in the beginning, here's what I think it is for me. It's really, really difficult. We'll just use the jujitsu analogy because we just can't.
Of course you're right. Of course we can.
We're terrible at it and it sucks sucking at it. And then once you get, it would be stupid to say, okay, I finally got good at this, so I don't hate it all the time. Now I'm done. I'm going to hang it up the gi and say, I'm not going to do jujitsu anymore because I accomplished it. Once you figure out how to make all these pieces work, it becomes fun and easy and light. And you can spend 1 hour and make $500 instead of 1 hour and make $15, which is what you were doing. And when you were working for $15 an hour, you would have given anything to be able to make $500 an hour or $5,000 an hour, whatever it turns into. So it actually, the better you get at it, even though you told yourself, I just want to get to this point and quit, that isn't how most things in life work. Once you get to that point, that's when it becomes fun. That's when you get to do the parts of the job that you like and only the parts of the job that you like. That's when you get to say, well, I have enough money. I don't need to keep working, but my kid might not be okay, but other people need help. So I'm going to keep working, making this money so I can help others. That's the only explanation I can think of for why I tell myself, man, I'm going to get the team to this point and I'm going to ride off into the sunset. No, once I got to that point, I wanted to go do it again in Hawaii because that'll be easier this time.
Yeah,
that's funny.
It's like the goals just keep changing and growing.
They do.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of happiness in growth. Like happiness is from growth for a lot of us.
I like to celebrate every time I have a big win in life. I do little things. I treat myself like I did a huge deal. I made $200,000. I went and bought a Louis Vuitton bag. I know it's cliche, but I treated that moment to enjoy that moment in life. Because, you know, what is life for? It's to treat ourselves.
What do you say to Heather Brandon? Treat yourself. Isn't that your thing?
That's from Parks and Rec, the show Treat Yourself. Yeah, one of my favorite shows of all time. All right. Yeah, Treat Yourself Day. Let's move this thing towards the end and go to the last segment. It's called our
Famous Four.
This is the part of the show where we ask the same four questions every week to every guest. So we're going to throw them at you right now. Number one, and our favorite or current favorite, like either all-time favorite or current favorite real estate related book.
Oh, I mean, I got to say your book.
Yes. Thank you.
I could be cliche and I could say Rich Dad Poor Dad because, you know, that's everybody's cliche. And actually, I met him at Outrigger Canoe Club. I met him at
Kiyosaki. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's a member over there. It was, we were at dinner and my wife's like, oh, that's David. I mean, Robert Kiyosaki. And we just bought him a drink, you know, and we're the next table over. This is a higher end. I want to bring you to dinner.
Yeah, I want
to
go.
It's a private club.
Yeah, I want to go.
You know, no cell phones, a private invite only. You can't just go there.
Wow. Yeah, I want to go with you.
The richest guy there is eBay. I seen him one
time. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because he's the richest guy in Hawaii, right? And he's a member over there. But I seen Robert over there, bought him a drink. He said nothing, you know, just give a wave, nothing, right? Next morning, I go to it's a private gym they have too. Next morning, I'm in the gym. It's like 9 o'clock. You know, everyone's gone. It's just me and him in the gym. Like, oh my God, that's Robert Kiyosaki. Like, I'm so nervous. Like, I can't, I got to say something to him, right? I just go and just start chatting. He's a chatterbox. The dude's so cool. He told me on his first deal, he paid a realtor 10 grand to find his first deal on the side to work exclusive for him. You know, 10 grand back in, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, 70s or 80s, whatever. Money,
you know, and this guy, he's just a wealth of information. I mean, all his stuff he shares, he lives it. It's better and worse. I think at the time he was actually getting foreclosed on, on a big group of properties he has. Of course, his books are great. I can go on. I see all your books behind. I'm like, I read that. I read that.
That's funny. Yeah.
I think more important than the best book is spending the time to read books.
Yeah.
You know, instead of driving now, I don't listen to radio. I have my books on tape going, playing in fast forward because I want to listen to them faster. I listen to like 1.5, 1.25, depending on the person. You know, just constantly filling my head full of knowledge. And knowledge is what, and even if you can just one little takeaway, that's all worth it. You know, I want to do the 52 books a year. I think you said it once, 20 minutes a day will give you 50 books a year. Yeah, so.
It's doable.
All right. What is the business book that has made the biggest impact on you?
Traction is obviously huge because that's helping us scale right now. Yeah. It was Miracle Morning, of course. Yep. Miracle Morning didn't seem like a book I was, because I'm not a morning guy, but had so much more other information about real estate that you're like, what? How come they're talking about this? Like, it is a real estate book, I think, more so than people realize. Read that book, of course, read that because they have a lot of broad spectrum about business in general and life.
Hal Elrod is actually going to be the keynote speaker, one of the keynotes at BPCon this year. Mm-hmm. So Bigger Pockets Conference happening in New Orleans, October 4th and 5th, I think it is, or 5th and 6th, early October. Anyway, I think tickets are probably sold out by now, but if not, you can get them at biggerpockets.com/conference.
And you guys' books, read your guys' books, both David and you guys share, I've read your guys' books, some of them I've read twice. You share a lot of tidbits that really, it's so straightforward, it's so easy to understand. It's a lot of times you just got to take the action. And you guys break it down and make it really simple to understand. And real estate's simple to understand. It's the action.
It's not complicated.
It's that cliche term, easy to learn, difficult to master.
Exactly. Yeah.
There you go. All right, David, next question.
All right, next question. What are some of your hobbies?
Paddling.
Yeah, there you go.
I grew up surfing, diving, fishing, anything in the water. I grew up in the water. Before school, we'd go surf. After school, we'd go surf. I grew up on the Big Island. That was life. Later, I grew up paddling, just developed. It's a community. It's a network of people. Some of my guys I hire are paddlers. There's something about the camaraderie of it. It's almost like the military guys that they grow when they do basic training, when they do that together, the Navy SEAL guys,
Navy SEAL training,
they do that. They get that camaraderie. It's the same thing when I paddle in a 6-man boat, it's 9 guys. You're killing yourself for each other. There's something about giving your all, 42 miles and you're done. Like I do the single man thing. After 30 minutes, I'm like, what am I doing out here? Like it takes four and a half hours for me to do this race. In 30 minutes, I'm like done. It's such a mental
game. You're right.
It's a mental game. And when you push yourself mentally beyond your limits, it just gives you capability to do so much more. And I got to be honest, I haven't paddled in like 2 years, really. COVID kind of started and we're doing our own house and life takes over, of course. But finding that routine and it really gets you being out in the middle of the ocean on a little stick with a little canoe. Nothing else matters in life. Not how many properties you have, not how many deals you got going on. It's about you making it back to shore alive and not dying. And, you know, the ocean is so powerful. And I love reading the ocean. It, you know, in that Molokai race I talk about, you can't even see Oahu, but I know from the ocean, you know, the groundswell is going this way, the topswell is going this way, the wind's blowing this way. I know where Oahu is. So having that visual in life where, you know, where we're going to go.
I love it, man.
But paddling is, oh man, I love that sport. If I can do it full time.
Just be a full time paddler. I love it.
But there's no money. I want to get you guys going out there sometime.
I know, we'll do it.
It's a good network of people, really.
I agree.
It's a Hawaii sport. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you the last question of the day, of me anyway. David's got one more, but what separates successful real estate investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Oh, that's a loaded question. There's so much. I was thinking about, we touched on action. We touched on problem solving, being creative on deal structures, having that mindset to do more and having the cojones to do it all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge, huge part of it. And I think the underlying thing of it is what do you want in life? Where do you want to be in life? I mean, a lot of people are okay and it's very comfortable taking that, you know, W-2 paycheck every Friday. You know, it's very comfortable and it's nice to have that feeling. But as soon as you're ready to take that next step in life, you know, you want more and really, really want it. You got to want it like nobody else wants it.
Yeah.
Not for anybody else, but you got to really, really want this. And that will take you to the next part in life.
Awesome, man. Very cool. Well, David, you got your final question.
We'll last question of the day from me. Indar, where can people find out more about you?
Of course, on Instagram. If you guys just message me on Instagram, I'm Indar Hawaii. All day long, I'll message you guys back and love to help people and talk to people about it all. Any questions you got, of course, Indar at Our Home Investments, and text me, 808-989-2323. I love partnering with people. I love bringing investors in. Just talking about your deal. There's enough wealth to go on. There's enough deals to go on. I'm not going to take your deal. I'll talk about your Hawaii deal if you want. Little key point about Hawaii is Malamada Aina. I like to share that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yes. What does that mean?
Malamada Aina. So we grew up here in Hawaii, and Malamada Aina is always kind of, you'll hear it in the back tones of things and stuff. And it means to respect and take care of the land. And I think that's what we're doing as flippers. A lot of times you'll find these homes that are just torn down, just ready to fall down. You're bringing that life back for years to come. You're taking care of that land for a family to enjoy for 30 plus years to come. I feel like that's what we're doing. We're taking care of this place that we grew up, and we're providing it, you know, for other people to enjoy. And it's a huge part of how I live my life. From integrity to respect the place I grew up in, to give back, you know, from jobs that we're hiring to giving to people to bettering our communities and for our families for years to come. And I would love to give back and do more, but there's like a fine line.
I hear you.
Sell a house for so much and it's job.
I hear you.
But Malamada Aina is a huge part to live by.
Very cool, man. Appreciate it. Thank you for coming to the Seashed today. You and I are going to go get some lunch after this and laugh at David, who's over back in California. So
we're going to get a Pokeball.
David, take us out of here.
Yes, sir. Indar, great conversation, man. Thank you for sharing so much of what goes on in your personal business and your personal life. I thought this was a great show, and I think people really liked it.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Right on. This is Dravid Green.
Is your name? We're not editing that either. That is in here. Dravid Green. Dravid Dean.
This is David Dream.
Give a dream.
This is David Green for Brandon Treat Yourself Turner, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.